Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
I'm Rachel, one of the nurses at the charity. In this recording of one of our first Facebook Live videos, I spoke to Alice May Perkis, who has recently published her first book, Life, Lemons and Melons, about her experience of breast cancer. We know that a third of women with breast cancer experience anxiety for the first time in their lives after their diagnosis and treatment. I chatted to Alice May about mental health during and after treatment and ways to manage feelings of anxiety, depression and stress. If you have any problems or concerns from listening today, you can find all of our services, including our helpline, which I work on our website at breastcancercare.org.uk. Now back to the podcast. I am joined this evening by Alice May Perkis, who is writer of this amazing book, and we're going to talk some more about that shortly. And she's a blogger. And also, she was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 26 in 2015. And we're here today in the Facebook London office. Very excited to be here.
Yes.
So thank you for having us. And we are going to be really focusing today about stress, anxiety and mental health, both during and before and after a diagnosis of breast cancer, all of which are very much, or have been very much, and still continue to be very much part of Alice's day-to-day life. And she's going to share lots of top tips with us, and hopefully we'll be able to help those of you out there to be able to get some support. Please remember to comment in the box below. We really want this to be as interactive with you as possible, and we will be talking through a wide range of issues, not only about mental health and how to get through that. So, yes, please do interact with us.
Yeah, fab.
So, Alice, do you want to tell me about a little bit about your diagnosis, and then we can...
Sure. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer in July 2015 when I was 26. And I had, you know, I'd found a lump in my breast, in my right breast, and kind of hadn't really thought anything of it. I was very, very casual about it. And I went to get it checked out because my mum full named me. And you know when your mum uses your full name, it's serious business. So, yeah, I went to get the lump checked out. And it turned out that I had breast cancer. So, as you can imagine, it was quite a shock. And I'm sure lots of people watching this will identify with that emotion. But as well as that, I have lived for most of my adult life with fairly severe depression, and about probably about 6 or 7 months before I got diagnosed with my breast cancer, I finally began seeking help for my mental health issues, because I was really, really struggling. And I had been put on antidepressants, and I had started a course of CBT.
And where was that based? Was that in the hospital?
No, that was... because it was before I got diagnosed, it was all through my GP surgery. So I'd started having cognitive behavioural therapy, and it was actually my... very last session with my therapist came 2 days after I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I walked into his room, and, you know, he did this thing where every week he would say to me, "So, how are you doing?" And it was more than that kind of perfunctory, "How are you?" It was kind of, "Tell me everything." And I was like, "Well, funny you should ask how I am. I just got diagnosed with breast cancer." And I had... I'd spoken to him so honestly and openly about so many things, and he'd never been shocked, and that was the first time I saw him show any kind of emotion. But yeah, so the combination of breast cancer and mental health and how they impact each other has become a bit of a kind of pet project for me. And it's something that I feel we should be talking about, and I think it's something incredibly important to have conversations about.
And it would be really important and interesting for us to know your experiences out there of the issues that Alice has just been talking about. So if you do have questions or comments you want to make, we would really love to hear them.
Definitely. Because, you know, I think... we're all kind of in this together. Mm. You know, I'm coming at this from a primary diagnosis, so my experience is different to those who may have a secondary diagnosis. But I think, you know, we can learn a lot from each other, and we can get a lot of support from each other as well. So, yeah, I think it's really important if there is anything that people want to say, that they want to talk about, they can. I think it's really good to have that space to do that now.
So in terms of your treatment, what treatment did you go through?
So about 3 weeks after I was diagnosed, I was in for a mastectomy. So I had a single mastectomy on my right-hand side. I had quite a few problems with my surgery, not through any fault of anyone's, you know. It was just my body wouldn't heal, basically. Mm. So I had my initial mastectomy with an immediate reconstruction, and then basically, I kept on having problems with like leaking and infection risk, and I ended up having my implant removed. So I lived flat for 18 months on my right-hand side. I had 6 sessions of chemotherapy and 15 sessions of radiotherapy, and finished my treatment in March 2016, so just over 3 years
just
ago.
Just thinking about that whole trajectory, how were you through that time? Were you ploughing through, or was it just really, really a difficult time for you mentally?
I think when you're on the kind of treatment trajectory, and I think this is something that a lot of people talk about, you kind of know what you're in for, right? Because you go to the hospital and you get put on this NHS pathway, and the NHS pathways tend to work incredibly well. So you go from appointment to appointment, you just have a list of where you have to be and when you have to be there, and stuff kind of happens around you. For me, definitely looking after my mental health became a very different... I kind of stopped concentrating on my mental health. So I'd done all of this work in CBT to look after my brain and control some of the negative thought patterns that I was having. But then suddenly the tumour in my breast was more threatening to my life. So I kind of had to concentrate on that. So for a long time while I was in treatment, I kind of just buried my head in the sand when it came to looking after my brain, and I didn't do it. All of the techniques and the tips and the tricks that I'd learned when I was having CBT just went straight out the window. And I became much more concentrated on, you know,
because
dealing with the
cancer
part.
Focus.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that's completely natural. But then when I came to the end of treatment, as, you know, lots of people say this, lots of people recognise this, that when you come to the end of the treatment and those appointments stop, then you're suddenly like, whoa, what just happened? And you kind of have to figure that out. And I think that's when it hits a lot of people, what they've been through and what, like, that you may have been neglecting yourself during that process, because you just, like, you go into survival mode, or I certainly did, at least.
I mean, that really resonates with me as a nurse specialist, and certainly at Breast Cancer Care. We have so many calls on our helpline.
Yeah.
Just describing what you've described. We have got a comment from Sharon, who is asking, do you have any advice for people supporting friends or family after a diagnosis where they are struggling with mental health?
Yeah, I do. I think one really important thing to remember is that cancer doesn't necessarily end after treatment finishes. For a lot of people, it goes on for a really long time. So for me, for example, I finished my treatment, my active treatment, 3 years ago, but I only finished the process of my reconstruction last April. And I think actually just remembering that can make a massive difference to the individual. And, you know, not forgetting everything they've been through. And I think another big thing is people often say, oh, so you've finished treatment now, that's it, great, you're done, you can go back to normal. And I think any person who's ever had a cancer experience knows that normal's completely different after cancer. And I think as a friend, recognising that and attending to that and just checking in on your pal and, you know, I think there's still a lot of mental stuff and there's still a lot of emotional stuff that needs to be dealt with. So anything friends can do to help with that, I think, is really important.
And what I'm just thinking about all the ways that you could be in touch with somebody. It was, what worked for you? Was it that person who sent you a text every week or maybe an email? Or...
Yeah, so I actually think it's the texts that aren't necessarily about cancer. They were the things that really kind of helped me. So actually, I have a couple of friends who are incredible at this, but there's one friend in particular who will text me and say, oh, hey, how are you? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Blah, 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 blah. Have you seen this hilarious dog on the internet? Blah, 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 rather than talking about my emotions. And she is an incredible friend because she will recognise that that's me deflecting and then go, okay, cool, yeah, the dog's great, but how are you? Yeah. And that goes such a long way. So there's a campaign that Time to Change are running, which is the Ask Twice campaign. Because, you know, it's so easy. And we have this British thing where we say, oh, hey, how are you? Oh, yeah, I'm fine, thanks. How are you? It's that kind of perfunctory question. So, yeah, just if you ask twice, it means that your friend knows that you're ready to listen and you weren't just looking for a throwaway, yeah, I'm fine.
Because for a lot of people, they find it easier just for you to say, yeah, actually, I am fine. Then they can just carry on.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, when the question is, how are you? And the answer is, actually, I'm not that great. That's a lot. And, like, for me, I never want to feel like I'm burdening someone else with my issues, you know? So I know that if somebody asks me again, it's because they genuinely want to know.
That's really good advice. We've got another question from Vicky. After a double mastectomy, chemotherapy and radiotherapy, really anxious about a recurrence. I'm really positive, but there are dark days. Any tips?
I think that's just so natural, isn't it? You know, like, I think any person who has had any form of cancer lives with the fear of recurrence. And I read a really great analogy the other day. There's two that I really like. There's the mountain lion in the fridge. So the idea behind that is that you go into the fridge one day, you open the door, and you suddenly see there's a mountain lion in there. And after that, you slam the door shut because you know that the mountain lion's there, and do everything you can to deal with it. But then it's still kind of always going to be there. And I think in terms of the anxiety, and this is, you know, I haven't figured this out yet. You know, I'm still learning. I think it's just kind of taking every day as it comes and doing your best and remembering that you are doing your best. Yeah. You know, we're all so hard on ourselves and we think about all the things that we should be doing. But actually, you know, sometimes just taking a moment to kind of reflect on what you've been through and, yeah, just giving yourself that time, I think, is really important. You know, the anxiety, I think it changes. I don't think it necessarily goes away. It might fade a bit, but I'm a massive, massive believer in, like, self-care and just really looking after yourself. So
I think, do you want to say a bit about what you do for that?
Yeah.
Because you've got some really interesting
Yeah, so maybe call me a glutton for punishment, I don't know. But I am a cold water swimmer. So this year I swam for the first year through the winter in Brockwell Lido. So it's completely unheated, 50-metre pool. I'd love to be somewhere where I could, like, swim in nature, but I live in southeast London, so I have to make do with Brockwell, and it's a great place to make do. But, yeah, cold water swimming is a really big one for me. And I think it's about creating an arsenal of tools that work for you. So, you know, what might work for me might not necessarily work for other people. And when I'm talking about self-care, I'm not necessarily talking about, like, bubble baths and candles, you know, those things are great. But when you're really down in the depths, when you're in the dark place, they're not the things that are going to help you get out of it. The self-care things that are going to help you get out of it then are getting up, brushing your teeth, washing your hair. And they're just as crucial parts of self-care. And then I have, like, this arsenal of stuff that I do when I'm feeling well, that kind of helps me keep the darkness at bay. You know, so I do a lot of yoga, I do mindfulness and meditation, I read loads because I find there's something really great. One brilliant way to get out of here is to get into somebody else's head. So books are great for me.
I think you made a really important point. It's finding your own way, isn't
definitely
it? And there is something, I mean, really and truly about getting out there and getting in the air, fresh air.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you talk about that in your book, but I mean, certainly if I was advising someone as a nurse, just getting out and getting that exercise, whatever it is, even if it's a walk, it doesn't matter.
Even if you just, like, step out the house and stand somewhere for 10 minutes. One thing I do if I'm ever feeling really, like, in my head and if I'm really struggling with my mental health, I like to go and stand outside and literally just think about my feet on the ground, because it's really, really grounding. And it just brings you out of your brain and more into, like, your body. And that's a huge part of dealing with anxiety and depression and mental health, I think. And even better if you can take your shoes off and just feel your feet in the grass and, like, ground yourself in nature.
Yeah, definitely. If you were trying to help someone who's watching this now to recognise the signs of anxiety, depression, time when it might be time for them to go to their GP and seek help, what would you say to them?
You know, I think we all have bad days. We all have off days. And it becomes problematic, I think, when it starts impacting your life, impacting your relationships, impacting your work, or if it's lasted for a couple of weeks. I do a lot of talks about mental health in the workplace, and that's what I always say. If you've had a period of low mood or anxiety for kind of 2 weeks or more, that's when you should chat to your GP or your breast cancer nurse, if you've still got one. You can also talk to Mind, they're incredible, and the Samaritans as well is another really good resource. And I think sometimes something that a lot of people have said to me actually since reading the book is, I've had those issues, but I never really thought about them. I thought it was just me. And I think having somebody stand in front of you and say, this is a problem that I've had, can make it...
Yes.
It makes you able to understand yourself in a slightly different way. Yeah.
And know that there is something that you can potentially do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes I don't recognise that I'm in... I call it the dark place. Sometimes I don't recognise that I'm in the dark place until I'm, like, clawing my way out of it, like, blinking in the sunlight. But I think getting to know yourself and listening to the ways you're talking to yourself is a really... good way to kind of identify when problems are becoming more serious.
I mean, I think just one more comment that's been left by Vicky. I've had my lumpectomy, but as one node, I'm waiting now for CT scan, which is next Thursday. I'm dreading waiting for the results. Also need second op to remove all nodes as a precaution. The wait is not good when you suffer from anxiety normally. You are so right.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, again, you just have to take it a day at a time. Do you know what? If you can't even manage taking it a day at a time, take it an hour at a time. You have to break things down into manageable chunks, and being kind to yourself is so, so crucial when you're going through that sort of thing. You know, I wish I could sit here and say, if you'll do this, this, this and this, you'll feel better. But it doesn't work like that. And I think it's just really important that you are being super kind to yourself and looking after yourself and, you know, just, really taking good care.
Oh, thank you so much,
no
Alice.
Worries.
Can't believe it. We've come to the end of our...
I know, that was quick.
...of our chat. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Breast Cancer Cares podcast. If you have any questions about mental health, anxiety or stress and breast cancer, please do give us a call on our helpline on 0808 800 6000, or you can find support from other women who have had a diagnosis on our forum.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.